it really comes down to a mindset. You know, what are you prioritizing? What's important to you? And what's your character like? And are you built for it? You know, are you able to withstand the sacrifices and take the steps necessary in the right direction to create something that can outlast you?
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me is John Kasman. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Todd?
Fantastic. So John is a real estate investor and also a fellow podcaster with Target Market Insights. Did I say the name right?
That's right.
All right. So John, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about you, what you got going on, and why you're here?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Todd. I mean, first of all, I think that what you're doing is great, right? You're talking about the pillars of wealth creation and laying this out for people to really understand what it takes to kind of build wealth. And it's a really important aspect of it. For me, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a real estate investor. Technically, I still have a day job right now. So balancing all of that and building a business on the side, a business that you can roll into full time and kind of create the lifestyle that you want to create. You know, and I think about the word wealth. And for me, it's really about being able to do what you want to do. You know, it's not necessarily about how much money you have in the bank. While that's important because you need money to do the things you want to do, it's really about being able to create the lifestyle that you want. You know, for us, you know, I have parents that are aging. You know, I've lived away from home for the last 17 years. And, you know, it's great being solo, but now that I've got two young kids and they're spending time with grandma and grandpa and, you know, seeing their cousins, it's been really more important for us to be able to live wherever we want to live and spend our time doing the things we want to do. And, you know, I spent most of my career in my in the corporate world coming up in an industry that really only had really an industry in a handful of cities. So it kind of forced me to be in some of the major metros, but making sure that we were taking our time to build something with real estate that would allow us to live wherever we want to live. And again, I mean, as those kids age, you know, I don't know about you, but it's getting a little cold here. I'm in Chicago and, you know, it's always the snow in a windy city. And I know you're out there in Minneapolis always dealing with your snow. So, you know, you're getting to a point where I don't know how much longer I want to deal with that. We might have to start spending the winter somewhere a little bit more tropical. So that's what we're trying to build up.
Oh, funny. So somewhere tropical. So is that you saying that, or is the wife along board with that too?
The funniest thing is the biggest champion is my father. And I'm like, Dad, I haven't lived with you in like 20 years, but he's still like, why don't you go somewhere warm so I can visit you? So, you know, he's getting closer to that retirement age. And I think he's looking for some excuses to be with the grandbaby somewhere a little bit nice. But no, you know, I don't necessarily need to move there. I just, you know, it wouldn't be bad to take a month or two and spend it somewhere warm as opposed to you know, trying to tough out these brutal winters.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you there. I think about that a lot, because I've actually got several friends now that have like just up and left for the winters.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, that'd be nice. Especially as I look outside right now, and it is nice outside in right. Minnesota. It's going to be 40 today.
Okay.
I think 38, so close.
Okay. Enough. That's a balmy day.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice and warm, but we got 3 feet of snow on the ground, so, yeah, you know, I mean, somewhere a little warmer would be nice.
Right.
So John, you got a full-time job, and I knew you were working. I guess I didn't know it was full-time, so that's awesome. So you got a full-time gig, well, right? Right. But then you've also got a handful of rental properties, and you're still building that. You've been a part of some awesome syndications here.
Yep.
And then you've got your podcast going. So you got a lot going on with your full-time gig and all that. So how do you manage it all properly?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think that anytime you're looking to build something and where you don't have the ability to do it completely full time, you really have to figure out how do you manage your schedule and how do you prioritize, you know, because there are things that are important but aren't necessarily a priority. And there are things that are urgent but aren't necessarily that important in the grand scheme of things. So, you know, I've really tried to spend more time learning how to better prioritize. And it's tough because, you know, if you get a call from, especially in these winters, right, you get a call from a tenant that their heat is off. Guess what? That urgent matter now needs to be taken care of immediately. You get a leak or something like that, you kind of have to drop what you're doing to run to it. Or, you know, from a work standpoint, you know, you get a client meeting or a client presentation. Okay, well, now you've got to go handle this thing or deal with it. So it's not necessarily the things that are important in the grand scheme of thing when you look back on your life, or, you know, forecast out 3 years down the road or 5 years down the road, and you say, hey, you know, that was a great use of my time and energy. But there's still important things to do. So just trying to balance those, you know, balancing the things, recognizing that, you know, there's still some urgent things that are going to pop up. So you need to be a bit flexible, but trying to get up early. I mean, for me, early mornings, late nights, that's a lot of what we're doing. So, you know, I'm usually, you know, recording the podcast whenever we can. We're editing it, you know, late at night or early in the morning and getting that out. And just finding time to grind and put in the work, you know, and ultimately it's about what you're building. You know, for us, it's about understanding what the end game is. It's about creating the lifestyle that we want. And that just takes a little bit more sacrifice today as opposed to, you know, just being comfortable.
Cool. And you don't have to answer this question.
I will answer whatever questions you ask unless it gets crazy.
I'm not going to ask anything.
Right.
But so, John, is it ever a plan of yours to go, you know, to quit your job or to at least go part-time in your job?
Yeah, I mean, that's the plan. I mean, the plan for me is to, you know, it's not sustainable what I'm doing, right? I mean, you're working crazy hours. You're working day job hours. You know, again, I have small children, so they need a lot of my time. So a lot of the research, underwriting, writing the offers, things like that, I'm doing either late at night or early in the morning. There's this beautiful app called Boomerang from Google. It's a plugin. So, you know, if I'm really writing emails at 1 a.m., I can use Boomerang to send it whenever I want to send it. So it doesn't look like, you know, I'm always up in the middle of the night. So that's a little cool thing, a little cool tricks of the trade to just, you know, kind of help you with brokers and different people and just timing your day, right? I mean, if you know you're going to be in meetings all morning, but there's certain emails you want to get out, that's great to do it. But yeah, the plan is to quit, or at least to transition to either part-time or consulting. I enjoy what I'm doing, but there are a lot of parts of what I do that I don't enjoy. You know, there's a, I don't want to call it busy work, but there are the things that are more administrative in nature that don't necessarily add value to me, don't help me grow, and are not necessarily skills that work across different facets, especially in real estate. But again, anytime you get a chance to present ideas to clients, to me, that's great because it allows me to sharpen my presentation skills. So if someone's going to, you know, compensate me for that, it's something that at least you want to keep in mind. But real estate is what I want to do full time for sure.
Cool. I'd like to stay on this full-time and then part-time real estate building business for just a little bit if we can. Because I think it's important. There's a ton of people that are listening or that have been here that, you know, there's a lot of people that they're full-time, they're busy, they've got kids. You've got everything. There's no reason why there's so many people that have that excuse. You know, they, how do you find time for it? It's not finding time, it's prioritizing.
Exactly.
Right. You're there right now. I was there for a long time, and I still do a lot of things, and people say, well, how do you find time? So I want to kind of go into it even more. How do you find your time, and what are you doing to setting yourself up for success and what you're trying to achieve?
Well, you hit it right. It's prioritizing. And I think that it's really important to understand what your priorities are. It's easy to say, hey, I want to have a side business, whether it's real estate or whatever, right? Just, hey, I want to do this other thing on the side, or I want to quit my job. That's cool. But what are you doing to make that a reality? How are you prioritizing? I mean, a lot of people may look at it and say, oh, well, wow, John, you're looking to, you know, quit your job this year or whatever the case may be. It's like, but you don't understand. I've been working on this for 6 years. You know, this is not a plan that I came up with last night. This is something that I've been systematically working towards for a long time. And even before I bought my first real estate property, for 10 years, I've been thinking about it. You know, back in college, you know, I realized real estate was the path I wanted to go down. I just didn't know how to do it. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like I'm sure a lot of your listeners. And, you know, that really sparked that notion in my head. But I didn't have the resources from a family standpoint. And I was the first one to go to college and graduate from college. So for me, there was some stability that needed to be created. We actually purchased a property while I was in college. And during that time, I had no idea what I was doing. It was for the family. We kind of worked together with it. But I realized that, you know what, I need to get on some solid footing and do what I really enjoy doing and learning marketing. And again, in that book, you know, he talks about working to develop skills. And I've been in marketing for 15 years. So I feel like I've pretty much mastered that skill as much as I'm going to master. I mean, certainly there's new things that come up every day, especially with technology and social media changing the way it does. But I'm sufficient as a marketer to be able to take those skills and leverage them somewhere else. There's not much more I'm going to learn, you know, working at an advertising agency, and I've worked on the corporate side and worked on the client side. But I think it's really important to, again, prioritize. And for me, it's a balance of looking at your to-do list and understanding what are the things that are going to push your agenda forward. You know, do I need to talk to podcasters? Do I need to listen to podcasts? Do I need to read more blog posts? Do I need to read more books? There's like a direct correlation between reading books and success, especially business books or investing books and things like that. So listening to podcasts like this one, reading books, getting on Bigger Pockets, taking in all that information and surrounding yourself with like-minded people. I host a meetup out here and was just talking to somebody last night who's way more successful than I am. But he was asking me about syndication because he has never really done it. And it's something where, again, you create value and you have value yourself. And it's to make sure that as you're going through that education process, you're sharing information. And that's something where I realized that really helped me stay motivated, because you can get into some dark spots, especially if you're, you know, working full time and you don't necessarily want to tell people that you're investing, or if you grew up thinking money was something that you didn't talk about. You know, I get it. You know, I get why you don't necessarily share that information, but there are a lot of people who are going through the same kind of struggles or similar kind of struggles who may not know. You know, they don't necessarily have a reason to just focus their energy on wealth creation or, you know, finding ways to make extra money. And then when life hits them, you're kind of screwed, right? I mean, all of us are a tragedy away from being poor or homeless. You know, not all of us, but most of us, most of us are, right? And that's the important thing, is to understand, okay, if you lose your job, then what? You know, you talk about multiple streams of income. When you think about wealth creation, it's being able to survive no matter what happens to you. And you know, the only way you can do that is to create multiple streams of income. And if you get fired today or tomorrow, what are you going to do? And that's really the key, is to understand, what are your strategies? What are you going to do? You need to have 5 to 10 ways to make money every day. Otherwise, you put your family in jeopardy of being homeless. And that's something that, you know, when I was single, it's whatever, right? I just needed money to go out and have a good time. But when I look at my kids, I think about the sacrifices that we make. And I think about times when my father's a blue collar worker, he was on strike at Alcoa. And you know, I remember sitting thinking, what are we going to do? You know, he's holding a picket fence. There's no money coming in and he's making a little bit from the union. But what are we going to do? You know, am I going to have to go get a job? I got my first job at 13 years old. You know, I've pretty much been working nonstop since I was 13. So it really comes down to a mindset. You know, what are you prioritizing? What's important to you? And what's your character like? And are you built for it? You know, are you able to withstand the sacrifices and take the steps necessary in the right direction to create something that can outlast you?
I think that that last point is really important to really understand too, is because I think a lot of people, they see somebody that's been successful and they see maybe that person that's successful is kind of sitting back or everything looks good. Whether that person that's successful, you know, isn't working a ton or not, just things look good. Things look rosy and they don't realize those sacrifices. Like you say, you got to sacrifice. You've got to put in the hours. I mean, by listening to you, I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I was there. I was, and I'm still there, quite frankly, but you know, I was working a full-time job. I would get up early. I'd stay up until 2-3 o'clock in the morning and then I'd get back up at 6 o'clock the next day. Yep. And I'd pound it. Yep. And then Saturdays and Sundays I'd be working too. And it's just, you know, how it was. And you try to still have a life and you still see your wife and your kids. And so it's a balance. But you know, it's a grind too, for sure. So another cool thing that I liked, that you said, you talked about the guy who was a lot more experienced than you. You've got this meetup, which is another great thing that you've got going on. Really cool. Yeah. You know, but he's more experienced than you, and yet he's asking you questions. Some guy who's not, you know, who's not got this vast amount of experience like him, and he's asking you questions, and you can answer them and be educated about it. And that's great because you've put yourself in that position. So that's really cool. So I want take us through a couple of your real estate deals you've done. Now you're part of a few syndications, or at least one syndication. I want to talk a little bit about that, a little bit about some stuff that you got going on in Chicago. So just kind of take us through a little bit of what you're doing right now, or what you're excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited about a lot of things. You know, I'll start backwards from what you said, or start at the end and then kind of go backwards. Yeah, yeah. So I think the thing I'm most excited about is we're launching the Midwest Real Estate Networking Summit. So that's May 11th and 12th. That's going to be here in Chicago. We have a lot of great speakers who have agreed to come out and do this. None of the speakers are being compensated, which is amazing. So they're all coming out of their own free will just to share knowledge and information. We've got everyone from Joe Fairless and Dave Van Horn, both who have done their own conferences. You know, Bree Schmidt's my partner in that, so she and I will both be speaking. We have Mark Ainley, who's you know, has his company here in Chicago. Andrew Holmes, who hosts a really popular radio show. We've got quite a few, you know, guys, and it's kind of guys and girls, and it's going to be all about various strategies and techniques, and it's Midwest focused. So I think for a lot of our coastal investors who look at the Midwest to come in and, you know, maybe do turnkey rentals or invest for cash flow, it'll be a great chance for them to come learn a little bit more about, you know, how people are investing in the Midwest, learn a little bit more about the people who are actually there, and understand what the opportunities are. Because I think it's easy from afar just to look at numbers and invest, but they don't understand the pitfalls. And unfortunately, there have been quite a few folks who have lost money because on paper, they're supposed to get a 12 cap return. Yeah. And you get one tenant that doesn't pay, or one vacancy, or one tenant tears it up, and you lose everything. You know, there's a guy, Ben Walhood, who's also on our host committee, and he's the Chicago REIT president. And he tells this amazing story. Well, I should say amazing, but he tells this cautionary tale about his very first rental. And he bought it in Chicago in Cook County. And basically, he never received a penny of rent. The tenant that he inherited just didn't pay him. And it took him 9 months to get the tenant out. Took another, you know, month or two to return the unit and get it re-rented. And he just decided to sell the property. So, yeah, I'm sure on paper that looked like an amazing investment, but I'm pretty confident that that was like a negative return for him. Yeah. So, you know, we're doing that conference. really excited about that. So hope people come out, and we've got discount tickets. We can talk about all that later. But so we've got that going. We have a syndication that we're working on right now. So we're just really closing up the capital raise on that one. We did a previous one back in November, 192 units, and that's with a couple of partners of mine down in San Antonio, Texas. That was really interesting just because it's really a great property and great opportunity. And because of the size of the scale, it actually provides a lot of, I'm going to say, securities in the sense that it's not just one person going out and buying a single family property or buying a duplex. But because of the economies of scale, we can actually manage it, bring in a property management company, really control the entire asset and what we're doing. I know that's something you just closed on another pretty large property as well. But I think it's really important because a lot of investors I speak to are comfortable in the 2 to 10 unit range or so, maybe up to 20 units or so. But you start getting to these bigger numbers and they start to, you know, get a little more concerned. Passive investors don't care, right? I'm sure doctor, engineer, and you have money sitting in your bank account, you're investing for different reasons. But a lot of investors that I talk to, they're interested in these larger deals, but they're a little scared off by them. So I just think it's something where there are a lot of benefits. I just wish people could understand it. But that's part of why, you know, you have these educational type conversations to help people understand what's the advantage and what's the opportunity. And even though there may be 50 investors on a deal like that, it doesn't really change your return, right? Right. I think people get caught up in how many people are investing in a deal versus what's your return going to be, no matter how many people are investing, right? So we've got that going. We actually just turned over a lot of our portfolio here in Chicago. We think the market's really hot, and it had in a good way. Not necessarily that it won't be sustainable, but just timing-wise, we felt it was right based on where we want to go with our business plan, where we see ourselves headed. We wanted to cash out on a couple of properties and then invest them in better cash flowing properties and in places where there was still more upside appreciation potential versus some of the properties that we currently had.
Cool. Cool. So you took those, now you liquidated those. And is that what you said?
Yep. Yes.
All right. Awesome. So you've got, again, you're full-time. Now you've got ownership interest in a 192-unit build. You've got ownership interest coming up, assuming it closes, which, you know, it's not
closed. It will close. Absolutely. It will close. It will close.
And that's like a
253.
So that's awesome. That's great. So let's we're going to shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
We've been talking about all your successes and how you've been getting there. Let's talk about some of your failures.
Okay.
Just pick one of your biggest failures or one thing that we can learn the most from, and how did you learn from it as well?
Yeah, my first slip. Whoa, what a failure. I'm talking a flop. I'm talking bust your face open. And in short, here's what happened. So I was having a lot of success, you know. We bought smaller properties. We were doing very small value add plays. We renovated a kitchen. We, on one of them, we just knew the rents were below market. We just raised the rents and just managed it well. On another one, we, you know, we did some light renovations, put in property management. Overall, we were doing really well. We were making money, and we were making a lot more money than I anticipated for what we were doing. I mean, it's not like we were buying buildings that were vacant, gut rehabbing them, putting, you know, 50,000 or 75,000 a unit. We weren't doing that kind of stuff. I mean, I bought one property, it was 3 units. I think I painted a unit. I think that's all we ever did to that property. And we sold it 3 years later for $140,000 more than what we bought it for a 3 unit.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, it's just buying the path of progress, right? I mean, that's really what it boiled down to, understanding the market, understanding what was going on, and then knowing that my property was a little unique and had bigger rooms. So there was a lot that we liked about it. So when we're doing that, we're like, listen, this is amazing. How do I do this more so I can A, quit my job, B, create the lifestyle they wanted to create, but C, speed up the process, right? Looking for, I'm going to call it a shortcut. And I had some conversations and someone said, hey, you know what? You should look at one of two things. You should look at either A, raising capital for deals and doing that, or you should look at flipping houses and then investing the money into multifamily. I'm like, great, I'm going to do both, but I'm going to start with flipping houses. And my first flip, because like you said, I'm working full time and I've got so much other stuff going on, and I really wanted to focus on multifamily. That's what I love. That's what I enjoy. I brought on a partner. And my partner, he was a contractor. He was a rehabber. He had a system going. He had other projects he was doing already. I got to walk him. He was doing these trolley tours so you could actually go see all of his properties. We sat down with him. We kind of interviewed him, if you will, and talked to him about his process and all those things. And we felt comfortable enough to move forward with him. And that was a mistake, but that wasn't the biggest mistake. The biggest mistake was, when we started to voice concerns, he was growing too fast. And we realized, hey, when I met you, you had four projects going. Now you've got six projects. Now you've got eight projects. Mm-hmm. Hold on. You've got nine projects going at one time. Yet you haven't changed anything. You haven't added more manpower. You haven't added another construction crew. You haven't put another contractor underneath you. How are you going to manage all of this? And sure enough, he couldn't. So one day he was robbing Peter to pay Paul with the draws, and he would take my draw and redistribute it to another project. And my property would sit for a couple of weeks and we would call him up on it, and really no traction. Again, this guy had a system. I would talk to the other general partners and JV partners that he had. And we all started realizing that we were all having the same issue. And sure enough, I mean, that thing just completely imploded. This guy ran out of money. I think he didn't get one of the draws he was really depending upon. The guys just stopped showing up to work. And I just had to call my lender and say, listen, we've got a problem. We're all vested in this thing and I need your help getting out of it. I'm going to lose money on this deal. I've come to grips with it. I'm fine with that. But I want to salvage whatever we can salvage. And I said, I have two options. I can fire him as a partner and on the general contract on this deal. I need to bring in someone else who's obviously going to charge me more money to come out and finish this project, or we can try to stick it out with this guy. And they were adamant, like, nope, fire him. We'll front you the money you need. We'll put a second loan on it or whatever, and we'll get it done. So that was the biggest one, man. And I think the biggest lesson for me was take your time in going into relationships. Again, I felt like we did that, but the biggest thing was, if you can't align with someone on how issues are going to be handled, and if your voice is not going to be heard in a way where you can actually impact the decisions, it may not be the right partnership for you. And that's what I realized. You know, it wasn't that he was a bad partner, had bad operations. His problem was success. You know, handling success was his issue. And because he was not willing to listen, that was the issue. And while I'm saying him, the problem was me, right? Ultimately, it was because it's my project. It doesn't matter what he was going to do. The problem is that I didn't put myself in position on that project to move quicker when I recognized what the warning signs were and I recognized this was about to go south. I should have been more vocal and adamant that either he needed to change or I was going to make a change. So that's the learning, is just don't pass the buck. You know, I think contractors get a bad rep and some of that may be deserved, but the point is, it's your project. I don't care. It's your project. It's your money. So you take ownership of it. Take ownership of the investment. Take ownership of the decisions you make and make sure you're controlling it. Because if you are, you know, luckily it was just my money, but if I had investors, I absolutely would have been way more adamant about it because I would never want to lose someone else's money like that. So I think that's the biggest lesson, was like, you know, again, we took a loss on that property. And the lesson I learned was just, you know, we do a lot of research when we go into these properties. We understand what needs to happen. And because this guy had more experience than me, I kind of defer to him. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's a better businessman than me or understands the way operations need to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Good points. Contractors can be difficult to deal with, but now that you said it, what are you going to do about it? You know,
yep.
I mean, everybody knows it. If you don't know it going into flipping, well, you should. are you going to do about it? I mean, you have to have that plan in place that when that contractor goes sideways, that you've got something, a backup, you've got a system. You know exactly what to do. I heard somebody say that, you know, plan out your failure. And that way plan out several different scenarios of failures. And that way, if any of those failures come up, you can act quickly upon it. You know exactly what to do. You can go, oh, I already knew that was going to happen. Boom. This is what I'm going to do now about it. And I've made that mistake plenty of times, very similar to what you have done, not on necessarily the same exact level, but with contractors of they're messing up and the work's not getting done and they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. They're taking my draw and they're all of a sudden working on other properties with that money. Yep. They're paying their home mortgage or whatever they're doing. And the work's not getting done. And I go, oh, geez, you know, I could hire somebody new that would come in there, but it would cost me more money. Or I could just kind of let this guy stay in there and keep on working. That's never the right answer because I've done it before. I've allowed the person to stay in, and that's never the right answer. You know, just get rid of them, cut your losses, and go on to the next one. Yeah, it's going to cost you more money, kind of. You think it's going to cost you more.
Yeah, Todd, can I just reiterate that point? It is never the right option. The moment you see the project going sideways with the contractor or with whoever, whatever that member of the team is, it's time to move on. Because I can't even imagine a scenario where it can turn around, you know, unless this person gets some sort of windfall. But and that's what happened. You know, we were waiting. When he's like, oh, I just need this other draw. Once I get the draw from this project, then everything will be back on track. Okay, so we wait. I mean, that's what happened. You wait, you wait, you wait. You're expecting. You're being optimistic, right? We're all optimistic people. We all see the good and not necessarily the bad. And, you know, that's the challenge. And unfortunately, that was the thing that made the project worse. Whereas, you know, once the project kind of got behind schedule, it should have been a sit down conversation. Look, here's the deal. I'm going to give you one last chance, but this last chance is you need to get caught up. You know, you need to get caught up by the end of next week or we're going to change contractors and go in a different direction. So, but yeah, just, you know, just really want to reiterate that point. Like it's just move on. It's business. People will get it. And they know if they didn't deliver, if you said you're going to deliver something and you don't deliver, you know, you can't be upset if somebody decides to move on.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. So take us through, you talk about now you eat, breathe, sleep, real estate, and business. So take us through that mind shift of like, you know, how are you there? If you can remember that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a slow build, right? It's like a snowball. But I would say I think the biggest thing was we bought our 2-unit property, and the watershed moment for me was we went to refinance this property. We gutted the kitchen. We, you know, did a lot of work to the property. We lived in one unit, rented out the other unit, and we had an FHA loan. So I only put down 3.5%, which was I think we bought it for 362.5. With credits and everything like that, I think we pay like $7,000 out of pocket, right? I think everything else was either credits from the seller or whatever. We went to refinance just to see if we could get out of the FHA loan or just see where we were at. And when we got the appraisal, we were shocked at how much equity we had created. Now, in fairness and in hindsight, a lot of that had to do with the fact that we bought in 2012 and we bought it right at the bottom. We bought in one of the best neighborhoods in Chicago and, you know, we updated the unit. So we created a lot of equity. We almost doubled the value of the property. So, and all I did was literally I updated the kitchen and I cleaned up the yard and I changed the side door, right? And I fixed the yard in the front. So I was absolutely amazed that so much equity could be created in what was essentially around 18 to 24 months. The bank gave me a $100,000 line of credit. And at that point I was like, wait a minute. Why am I spending most of my time during my day job trying to figure out, you know, whether or not the client wants to use this word versus that word when I can be going out there and finding opportunities to create six figures worth of value. So at that point, it just kind of really triggered and you went and found the next deal. And it was more of an information gathering where, you know, you kind of get this insatiable appetite to learn and understand how people are doing certain things. And I didn't set out to syndicate by any means. I mean, my process was simply, hey, you know, I'm buying some pretty good properties and I'm creating some pretty good value. How do I do this more? That's all I wanted. I just want to know, how are other people doing this more? And that's how I stumbled into raising capital for deals and syndicating larger apartment deals. And I'm like, oh, well, that sounds really interesting. Tell me more. But that's it, you know, and it's learning all the aspects of it and connecting and surrounding yourself with people who have that knowledge base and can educate you more, and they'll give you more resources. So it's just building all of that. And, you know, once you start to do it, you know, that's who you spend your time with. I mean, most of the people I talk to are real estate investors in some capacity, you know, through hosting a podcast. You know, you're talking to folks all the time through meetups. You're talking to people through, you know, brokers and other relationships. So it's pretty much on my mind on a daily basis. And that's just really something where, again, you're constantly finding ways to refine and get smarter and get better and building and taking it from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, great points. I mean, if you're in that business, if you get started and you start surrounding yourself with it, you're just, it's that snowball effect. I'm kind of the same way. That's exactly what happened to me, is just you get that one deal and then you start going to these meetups and you're reading books, like you said, and doing all that. And then all of a sudden everybody around you is doing the same thing as what you're doing, and you're surrounded by it. So,
yep.
Cool. So tell us about your goals moving forward. You know, what's maybe 10 years look, 5 years look from now?
Yeah. So, man, 10 years. So 10 years, I think we want to, you know, continue to be syndicating larger apartment deals. We'd like to have a strong portfolio of properties that cash flow monthly, and we want to create positive and strong living situations for our residents. So we want to create communities where people are proud to live there. We invest in pretty much Class B properties, a little bit Class C on a higher Class C side, but typically Class B properties. We want to continue to do that, build it out. By in 10 years, my oldest will be about 14. So hopefully he's doing a little bit of work around the business and cleaning up and learning a little bit of property management and construction. So getting him into the fold, I think just to learn a little bit more would be fun, to bring him to work and have him do some stuff. But just continue to build it up. You know, I don't necessarily have a numbers goal to it outside of lifestyle creation. You know, we want to live where we want to live. We're right now looking at potentially moving our family to Ohio to be with the rest of my family members, since I've been away for the last 17 years. So it's around that time to start getting a little closer to family. So doing that, working from wherever we want to work, and just creating a lifestyle that makes us happy.
Awesome. You know, the cost of living in Ohio is probably a little cheaper than Chicago.
Yeah, that helps too.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. So what's your favorite book, or what are you reading right now or listening to that you really like?
So I'm reading this book called Burn Zones. It's by George Newberry. And I met George at the a conference out in Denver. And man, this guy's got a phenomenal story. In short, he was an apartment syndicator. He, you know, basically had millions of dollars in real estate, and in Columbus, actually. So in Ohio. So he had a great portfolio going, and then a hailstorm essentially wiped it out. He went to file a claim with the insurance company. No insurance company wants to pay like a $20 million insurance claim. So they fought him and they won, and this guy lost all of his money. So he lost $26 million. And it's really his story about recovering from that experience. And it's a really good read. So I'm still reading that book now, but that's a really good read. So I would definitely recommend that. Listen to podcasts like yours, and you know, just continue to find other resources that are piquing my interest.
Yeah. Well, we were at that same conference. I heard that guy talk, and I'm just like, yeah. Oh my gosh, that is crazy. But he had, so part of it is like, well, I guess you never buy an 1100 unit building. Cause right. Wasn't it on an 1100?
It was, or yeah, two? I think it was 1100 units. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just massive. Wow. Anyways, I'll have to check that book out. I was going to buy it, and you know,
it's a good read. It's a good read.
Cool. I'll check it out. What's one daily habit that you do, for success?
Write my goals. You know, just, you know, we talked about how many things I have going on. So I have to really break it down into, hey, what do I need to accomplish today? You know, and that helps me because, again, my day between the kids and work, like, unfortunately, I don't own all of my time. Even with my investors, right? I mean, if an investor reaches out and they have a question about something, I kind of need to address that. So, yeah. you know, if I thought I was going to read three books today, like that may not happen depending on what, you know. So I have to write out my goals for the day and then figure out how do I prioritize it to make it happen. Usually it's getting it done first thing in the morning or, you know, late at night, just because at that time, no one else is going to reach out with an urgent matter. So I know at that point it's up to me and I can do it there. But throughout the day, I try to work on it as well to do whatever we can do, but just writing it out on a daily basis so I understand what's the priority for the day, what's the priority for the week, what's the priority for the month.
Cool, cool. Last question before we wrap up. What is your definition to the secret of financial freedom?
Ooh, the definition to the secret of financial freedom. I would say first you have to know what you want. And what I mean by that is, what are you willing to sacrifice to get what you want? It's easy to say, hey, I want to be rich or I want to have $10 million. What are you willing to sacrifice to get $10 million? I mean, to be honest with you, how to make $10 million has been listed in very many books. You know, I think the part of the reason you and I got into real estate was because we read enough people or read enough books or listened to enough people talk about how they were able to make money in real estate to know, okay, if you want to make money, real estate would be a great place to go. But what are you willing to sacrifice to do it? Just because it's just because the information is available doesn't mean it's easy for everyone to do it. So that's it. So when you talk about the long nights and a sacrifice, I mean, I have friends who, you know, they get to go to fun concerts or travel out to great vacations and it all looks great, right? And there's a balance of actually living your life while you pursue this dream and pursue this lifestyle. But it's the sacrifice. So what are you willing to sacrifice to get what you want? And that's really the key. Once you understand that, you can start to really build it the way you want to build it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, if you're willing to give up a little bit now to have a lot more later, you're able to do it.
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, John, I appreciate you being on the show. How could our listeners get in touch with you? And then let's talk too about that Midwest conference that you got going on.
Yeah, for sure. So they can reach me as john@kasmancapital.com for my email. I'm on social media at jkasman is my handle for Instagram and Twitter. And they can check out the website targetmarketinsights.com, targetmarketinsights.com. And yeah, for the conference, I mean, like I said, that's May 11th and 12th, the Midwest Real Estate Networking Summit. Really excited about that. Like I said, we've got some really good speakers and we're covering everything from, you know, finding deals, analyzing deals. We're going to go a little bit more granular than I think most people go at conferences, but really try to give some tips of how to find deals, how to analyze deals, how we're analyzing deals. You know, some tips on flipping, especially in, you know, this market where you run into some issues from a bureaucracy standpoint. I'm in talks right now with the mayor's office to see if I can get them a little bit engaged. So, you know, we'll see if I can get Mayor Emanuel to be involved in some capacity. But yeah, so we're just, you know, we're talking to everybody and we feel really good about what we're creating. And, you know, it's something that's more Midwest specific. You know, I think that there are a lot of conferences to learn about real estate and by all means, you should check them out. This will cover all of that. So if you don't know anything, this is still a great conference to come and just learn Midwest, you know, real estate in general. But I think specifically for those of us in the Midwest who don't have, you know, the appreciation that the coast have, who don't have, you know, the great population and economic indicator trends that, you know, the South and Southeast regions have, you know, the Midwest is a little bit of a different region. So I think this is something for us who can understand how to do more than just cash flow, how to do more than just buy a single family home and rent it out for the next 30 years. Cause there's other strategies than that, but, it seems like that's all people really know and recognize the Midwest for being good for. You can syndicate in the Midwest as well. You can flip properties in the Midwest as well. You can do a lot of other things. So
yeah. Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, John, and have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me on, man. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. Hey, special thanks to John Kasman for coming on the show and taking his time out of his day to talk to us and share his valuable insight. Always great to hear about somebody who's still working full-time, yet they're building their business and growing. And I would suggest to anyone, if you've got a full-time gig And especially if you've got, you know, a family that you've got to pay, just make sure you take care of everything first and figure out how to at least start to get that business rolling before you do completely quit your job and go on. So always good to hear from people like John. And 3 points I took from John's interview. First of all, prioritize. Make sure you prioritize and then get your mindset right. And I think those go hand in hand. You have to have your mindset right in order to really prioritize, truly prioritize the right way. I always hear all the time, like, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. Yet they're sitting on the couch and they're watching TV or they're, playing on Facebook and YouTube and whatever else, and they're wasting their time. So you've got to truly prioritize. And John, you know, beat us on that. Prioritize and make sure that you are committed, completely committed to what you're doing. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. Nobody has more time in the day. So if John can do it, that means you can do it as well, and anybody else can do it. The other thing he said is, and this kind of goes along with prioritizing, is what you're willing to sacrifice to get what you want. And so if you're not willing to sacrifice that little bit, right? If you're not willing to sacrifice for several years to be able to get your goals and get what you want, you're just not going to get there. I remember many, many times where I would wake up at 6 a.m. and I would work, and then I would work on my business all the way up until 2 or 3 o'clock and then go to bed and work weekends. And that's just how it is if you're going to want to take that next step. So make sure you're going to sacrifice. It's not going to be fun sometimes. Actually, maybe it will be fun because you love what you do, right? But it's not going to be the fun that you think of for a while until you start to get it. The last thing he talks about, and this is real estate specific, but it's also can be related to very, very much into business, is buy in the path of progress. And so really make sure you're thinking about where the trends are, what the trends are, whether it's real estate or whether it's, any type of business. If you're going to start a coal mining business, you're probably going to struggle, right? If you're going to start a coal mining business, that's not the path of progress. But if you're going to start a tech company, that may be the path of progress. So you've got to figure out where that path of progress is, and you've got to follow that. So again, appreciate John coming on the show. Go on to iTunes and give us a rating and review. That would really help us. So check out iTunes. Make sure you subscribe and then give us a rating and review. I'm Todd Dexheimer. Make every day a Saturday. Signing out. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. Episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com /pillars to claim your free course today.